This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5 brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Blockbuster trade between the Dodgers and the Red Sox. Mookie Betts, David Price heading west. What are your thoughts on the trade, and how does this impact Chris Bryant's future with the Cubs?
Well, I think it's a bad trade for the Red Sox. I mean, my God, you know, I saw a headline online, Red Sox spit at fans. That's effectively what they did. You know, this is a guy who is so good that they reportedly offered him a 10-year, $300 million deal after his MVP performance and their World Series win, and he countered looking for $420 million, 12-year deal. So they were just $120 million apart in value. Doesn't seem like that much. But, I mean, Mookie Betts, who's better than Mookie Betts? Mike Trout? It's a short list. There's not a long list of players that you would say are better than him. I read somewhere he's the best young player that they've developed since Ted Williams.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? So the haul they got is really not much, and I think that's the shocking part of the deal. You look at it, and you're kind of like, well, what else? I mean, what else do you get here? And I think that's worrisome if you're a Cubs fan. I think it makes you understand that the market for guys. Now, Chris Bryant, because he lost the grievance, there is more time on that deal. And there was a clock with Mookie Betts where you knew that he was going to be leaving to the highest bidder and you wanted to get it done before he hit free agency. So I understand the difference. But maybe the haul's not going to be as much as we imagined. And maybe you ought to rethink what you're going to do here. But again, when you're in a money dump, and that would be what they're doing with Chris Bryant, and that seems to be all that happened for the Red Sox. You're going to be on the bad end of a deal. That's scary.
What a tough week to be from Boston. First, you get kind of embarrassed at the Super Bowl commercial with that smock pot car, commercial, and now this.
I think it's always a bad week to live in Boston.
Yeah.
Boston's a great town.
It is a great town, but this is spitting in the face of Red Sox fans, and this is a tough one for them to take. It's tough. I think it's bad for baseball when you have a player that this one team drafts and develops and is in a major market and is an MVP caliber player. This is a guy that's a 2018 MVP. He's got 4 straight gold gloves. He's 27 years old. He's in his prime. And you've got to trade him because of the competitive balance tax. Now, maybe that's, you know, financially mismanagement of their, you know, roster and all the things that you can point to. But that's bad for everybody. And so my first thought was, okay, the Dodgers now just have had the best offseason. The first thought from a Chicago perspective, the Dodgers just stole away the offseason from the White Sox because they had a better offseason in terms of putting themselves in position to contend for a World Series and to win the National League. The other one was this just gave Theo Epstein, you know, if he needs it, more permission and more of an impetus, a nudge toward making a deal for Chris Bryant, because this underscores what they're talking about. They want to get under the luxury tax threshold of $208 million. They have a player that they don't think they're going to be able to sign long term. It doesn't matter how highly rated he is. He won't be the highest rated player traded this offseason.
Are they $100 million apart, $120 million apart, do you think?
Probably not, but I think if you're $20 million apart, or $120 million,
that's a lot of money to be apart.
It's still a lot of money, and there's still I don't know that, again, I think there might be a gap between what Chris Bryant wants, maybe what his agent is demanding, but that's his problem. And I don't think, I think it's going to be a moot point once they deal Chris Bryant, which I think could happen before they report to Arizona. So I think this just probably accelerates the process a little bit more. And it's not good. It may be good for the Dodgers, but I don't think it's good for baseball.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about what it means for baseball, what it means to build a roster and a team going forward. Is this going to be like the NFL now where you try to win early in these guys' contracts when they're under team control and you're able to spend money on other things? Like with the Washington Nationals last year, they did not re-sign Bryce Harper because they had younger offensive players like Soto able to come in and fill that role and thus spend the money
right
on starting pitching. And that's kind of what they rode to the championship. You know, Mookie Betts is a fantastic player. He is probably no worse than third in Major League Baseball. He's a guy that does everything. Former MVP, a great defensive player, hits for power, gets on base. He does everything. So it's fantastic for the Dodgers. Absolutely. Verdugo is going to be a stud. I mean, they got him back, at least. I don't know a ton about the pitcher. Apparently, he throws really hard, but that's about it. He doesn't miss a lot of bats. So it does seem like a future salary dump, because it's not like they're dumping a huge salary now. It's just that they're preemptively dumping the salary. And it is going to be interesting to see how teams deal with this going forward. We might see something similar with Chris Bryant within the next week or so. It makes you really think about the return, you know, for some of these players. Mookie Betts is fantastic. Chris Bryant is a great player. And you're not getting a ton back. You're not seeing these huge trade packages like we have seen before in the past. So it's really interesting to me to see how overall the trade market and player salaries and arbitration and team control are all coming together to change the shape of baseball and team building.
For the Dodgers, this is an amazing deal. I mean, first of all, you look at the fact that this is a big acquisition, and the past couple of years, they've missed out from making that huge blockbuster signing in the winter. So there's that. That's an awesome part of it. And then you just look at, you know, the fact that you look at who they're getting, Mookie Betts and David Price, and they don't give up anything. They don't give up any prospects. Nothing. I mean, this is awesome for the Dodgers, and it just solidifies them as the best team in the National League. This is a juggernaut of a lineup. This is insane. But when you look at things from the Boston perspective, yeah, not good. Not good. I mean, you are not, as Kevin, as you pointed out, I mean, you're getting an outfielder and a good pitching prospect. That's all. From the Boston perspective, you've just traded away one of your most popular players, the most popular player even, from your team, just 2 years removed from beating that team in the World Series. You've got to have a bitter taste in your mouth if you're a Red Sox fan this morning. And I agree, Mully, with what you're saying about the Chris Bryant deal and what this could mean. Doesn't leave a good feeling in my stomach thinking about not even getting a good return potentially on Chris Bryant. As we know, when we see certain trends every winter, and I hope this is not a trend that runs with the Chris Bryant deal, because if you are going to deal Chris Bryant, you got to get a hell of a lot in return. I hope it does not look anything like this from the Boston side of things.
It also shows you what you have to accept when you include a bad contract in a deal, which may affect the Cubs from a Jason Hayward standpoint. Maybe
that's a good point.
Maybe you throw in that contract, but you may not get the haul in return, but the benefit comes in getting rid of that salary.
But look at these. You know, we hear people complain all the time about everything going on about Wrigley and why isn't there more money spent, and look at how much money they're making. John Henry owns the Fenway Sports Group. It's the third highest rated moneyed group in the world. They own Liverpool. Anybody pay attention to what's going on? It's rated at just the sports group, $6.6 billion by Forbes. I mean,
but this would be the third straight year of being over the tax.
So they're running from it.
This is something that's bad for the game. As far as, you know, I'm not going to pity the Red Sox. They've had enough winning.
Sure.
Right? I mean, there's a group of, like, 15-year-olds in Boston that have seen, like, every team basically win a title other than the Celtics, and they're, you know, potentially the NBA Eastern Conference representative in the finals. I know Milwaukee's in the way, but just
Wasn't that long ago when Boston won it?
They're in the running, right? So I'm not going to shed any tears for the Red Sox, but it's crazy to me to think that the Dodgers are still in a position that they're not. They're still under the tax, right? They're not in that threshold. And look at the talent they've been able to put together. I still think there's a slight chance, that this Hayward and Bryant to Colorado thing could still happen. This kind of maybe puts it in pencil a little bit, but I do worry as a Cub fan, like, you're really not going to get much back. I mean, other general managers are going to use this as an example and hold it against the Cubs. I talked to David about it before the show. I talked to Kevin. Mookie Betts is really, really good. Chris Bryant's good. There's a difference between really, really and really. I mean, they're two different players. He's in another spot. Now, again, the only thing maybe that dragged it down was the fact that you attached David Price to him.
Top 5 player versus top 20 player? Is that a fair way to look at it?
In terms of 5 versus 15? Maybe not. Yeah.
15 or 20.
Depends if he's motivated and interested.
And healthy.
I don't quite get the question.
Cubs.com writer Jordan Bastian tweeted that the team has been in contact with Indians free agent second baseman Jason Kipnis, with Nico Horner the heir apparent at the position. Would Kipnis be a welcome addition or an impediment to Horner's progress?
Well, I don't know the answer to that fully, but I believe that if Jason Kipnis were to come here, it would be more of a maybe platoon role. So you're taking at bats away from Nico Horner to find out if he can play against, right-handers and left-handers. Maybe that's going to be an impediment, but I would hope not. I think that when you are ready to insert Nico Horner into your lineup, I hope it's as the everyday something, you know, whether it's whatever position. He's very versatile. We saw a glimpse of what he's capable of last year. So I hope that when he's not reduced to just being a platoon player, when we start to see him full-time, whether that's on opening day or whether that's in June or whether that's next year. I don't know what the timetable is, but I like a lot of what I see from Nico Horner. As for Kipnis, he's not been the same player since 2016. He's not been the same hitter. And you wonder, he is 32. He would come to you probably at a pretty good rate. What's curious to me, or maybe telling, is that this story kind of broke. Jordan does a great job for Cubs.com, but I think that he's also, you know, when he's not going to put something out there that may not be true, and he's not going to take a chance to throw something against the wall to see if it sticks. Not that everybody who covers the team does that, but we've all been there, and I think that he's probably less likely to do that. So this seems real to me. This seems like it makes sense in the context of their salary structure and wanting to get the, you know, they've been shopping on the clearance rack all winter long, and to me, Jason Kipnis is probably still on sale because for a reason. So if he's out there, this does make a little bit of sense.
Yeah, you know, Kipnis was on my radar with the White Sox when we were talking about should they make some sort of – he's one of the names that you looked at second base as a guy that was available, and, you know, would you move him in there until for the White Sox, Nick Madrigal was ready to go, and by that I mean the clock ready to start. I still don't – we have to talk about that at some point, the Nick Madrigal thing, because I still don't understand. If a guy's not a power hitter, then why are you worried about the clock starting, right? I mean, is he going to be demanding a ton of money? On the, I just think you could bring him up, and it wouldn't be that big a problem. I think making a move like this is exactly in keeping with what they've done this offseason. They are going out. They are getting guys that are either injured or at a state in their lives where you worry that time can't be overcome with their veteran guys. And so you roll the bones with it. So a guy like Kipnis coming home in front of the home crowd and all that stuff, that might work. That might help you. You know, the idea isn't to block Nico Horner. The idea is to help his transition and have someone there that you can rely upon and is a pro, and he could watch play when he's not playing. It's a good way to help a young player come along rather than putting all of it on him. Because, look, I mean, he came up last year and it was an emergency situation and he did very well. And you thought that was a good bump for the team, but look what happened, right? So I don't think it's fair to put it all on Nico Horner. I think it'd be a wise move to get a veteran guy like Kipnis, and you know, who knows? Maybe the home bump would change things a little.
Well, Kipnis hasn't really hit for a few years now, well removed from his best days in Cleveland, but he is versatile defensively. If they want to look for a guy that can play infield, outfield, move him around a little bit, left-handed hitter, it is discount rack. It is the 2019 offseason of the Cubs going into 2020 here. It's going to be in lockstep with what they've been doing. But
are you saying the Cubs are shopping in Filene's basement just like the Bears were?
Yeah, and they still wouldn't buy okay. Mitchell Trubisky either. I like Nico Horner a lot. I like what I saw from him last season. It was a very small sample size, and it is important to not get too ahead of ourselves when talking about a player that young who was kind of rushed up. It was an emergency situation. They needed a spark. Nick Castellanos couldn't do everything himself. They needed something else, and Horner was very good in a limited opportunity, but I think I sort of agree with you, Molly. It would be better to ease him in a little bit. Even if you don't go with Kipnis, they have David Bodie, of course. I know, David, you would never forget about that. As much as Cub fans would like to forget, Daniel Descalso is still under contract for next
Bodie's
year.
Bodie's going to be playing third, batting third.
Oh, yeah, they're going to trade Bryant. Boy, this team's a disaster.
I'd love to see Nico Horner start the season with the Cubs, but I understand that maybe he'll even start the season in AAA, but I'd love to see him start with the major league team. All that aside, I mean, I don't think this would be an impediment to the development of Horner. Kipnis is not no everyday player. As you guys all pointed out, his production over the past three seasons has been declining. However, this is a veteran presence that could help Horner more than hurt his development. I like the move. I think it's a smart one.
Sure. I mean, Ben Zobrist 2.0, maybe, right? Is this a replacement for Zobrist?
Is he taking the summer off? I just asked him.
Oh, the Kipnis family just got some bad news.
Will he walk up to an Elton John cover?
Is he riding his bike to work? Sorry, Dustin.
World Series hero Ben Zobrist being ridiculed on this station.
But in terms of his value to the team as a veteran, that's a good comp.
I love Zo.
It's a great question.
You guys should be ashamed of yourselves. USA Today Sports released its 2020 win projections yesterday and predicted the White Sox would finish third in the American League Central with an 83-79 record, while the Cubs were picked at 82-80. With a fourth place finish in the National League Central. Do you agree? Will the Sox have a better record than the Cubs? Will the Cubs be fourth? Will the White Sox be third?
Yeah, this is not even Pecota. I mean, you know, the Cubs are being treated cruelly here, and it's not even Pecota. It's USA Today. So, boy, I hope Pecota isn't looking, because this is ugly. You know, let me just say this, that if the Sox finished 83-79, I would be delighted. I think that is a good mark for them. I mean, I would prefer if they somehow made a bigger jump and won the division and all that. But a winning record is that's advancement and that's progress in my world. So I am not going to be upset if they end up with a winning record. I would prefer that they win the division. But, you know, again, things are happening here and the Minnesota Twins just got better all of a sudden. So that bothers me. But I get it. I understand why you'd say 83-79 for the White Sox. It seems about right. It seems a little low for the Cubs, right? Didn't Vegas say 86 games? And the Sox were supposed to be 84, so I think that's the range for the White Sox. But this seems low for the Cubs in fourth place. And if you look at the standings that they put together, it's I think the division winner is 88 games, right? So it's all these teams bunched together, and they just have the Cubs as the team that fades, and I'm not sure that that's accurate. So I'm going to say that the Cubs are better than that, and they're going to be better than fourth place. I don't know they're going to win the division, and I don't even know what they're going to look like, to be honest with you. But I think they're just based on the talent they have. And I get it. Pitching means everything. And you look at that pitching staff and you scratch your head a little. But I'm going to go with the Cubs being a better than fourth place team and the Sox being about right by USA Today.
Okay, we're all prisoners of the moment. So right now I'm trapped in a room full of White Sox optimism. So I don't think the 83 victories represents the kind of offseason they had. They had a better offseason than that, and they're in a division where they can do more damage than that. So I would think that's probably 3 to 5 wins shy of where I think they should be. So 86 to 88 wins. And then if you're talking 86 to 88, they're in wild card consideration. They're in the mix. They're in the hunt. And that's all that you want. So I think that's a little low. As for the Cubs, right now, I don't want to go the opposite, but I'm going to go the opposite. I don't feel optimistic about where they are at all because they haven't done anything. And it's going to get worse before it gets better if everything that we have said up to this point at 545 is true. And they're closer to trading Chris Bryant than they are to keeping him. Because if they do that, and they have a Red Sox-type unload deal just to get rid of salary and to avoid, you know, problems with the guy you can't sign long-term, they're going to take that step back that everybody has been prepared for all offseason long. So 82 victories seems about right to me. Fourth place finish, I don't know who else they're better than in that division right now because it's all about pitching, and they haven't gotten any better. Don't tell me Jeremy Jeffress is going to be that guy. They lost Cishek. They lost Stropey. They lost Cole Hamels, and I don't know how they're going to replace all those guys, so I think 82 sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, 500 for the Cubs are around there, maybe a shade over, maybe a couple games under. I think St. Louis is the class of the division still. Cincinnati looks very good with what they have been doing the last couple of years. Milwaukee, I'm a little bit more bearish on. I think they and the Cubs might both regress a little bit this season. So I think you could see the Cubs with 80, 81, 82 wins, but finish in third place behind St. Louis and Cincinnati. So I'm pretty much in agreement there with USA Today. And I can't really disagree with 83, 84 wins for the White Sox either. I think as much excitement as there is, and I've got a lot of it as well, and I'm very optimistic. The team is shifting gears into compete mode. This is just year one of what should be a long process of sustained success, and I know that's kind of been a buzz phrase and it's lost a lot of meaning because everybody just talked about sustained success, but this is year one. It's going to be a long-term thing, and players are going to develop at different rates. Development is not linear, as somebody also once said in the city at a certain point, so I don't want to get too ahead of myself.
How many times are you going to quote Theo this morning, Kevin?
I like Theo, what can I say, even though he's having a bad offseason. I don't know how much of that is down to him, but anyway, I digress. 83, 84 wins for the White Sox seems to me fairly spot on.
The 2019 White Sox were a 72-win team, and since the season's been over, they've made some big acquisitions, some big moves. They've improved their team tremendously. So an 11-win improvement that USA Today has projected to me is the right amount of optimism for my taste. So I like it. I'm okay with it. In terms of the Cubs, I'll have to agree with this, unfortunately. It pains me to say this as a Cubs fan, but an 82-win season and potentially fourth place sounds about right for a team that hasn't done a damn thing to improve itself. I hate to say it, and you might be trading away your best player. I hope it doesn't happen, but it's in the cards. And if that happens and we don't see a very good, healthy return from a Chris Bryant trade on top of that, my God.
They're trading him to the cards?
Don't say it.
It's a big jump for the Sox, and it's fine. I can get on board with that. I mean, based on what they've done this offseason, they deserve the love and the attention that they're getting. As far as the Cubs, I'll say what I've said again. Okay, it's the Cardinals' division to win. The Brewers have done nothing and maybe have regressed and done worse than the Cubs this offseason. And the Reds are still the Reds, and I'll take my chances until Chris Bryant's not on this team. Okay, until Chris Bryant's not on this team, I'll take my chances against the Reds this upcoming season. So we'll see.
So Cubs finish second right now?
I think second. Right? This is assuming Chris Bryant's on the team.
Interesting.
Today they're a second-place team.
Okay.
Stand by.
Is that a baseball question? Is that about the game?
I mean, it's about baseball, yeah.
Or did you get here late?
Are you okay with the Hall of Fame voter who didn't vote for Derek Jeter remaining anonymous? Is it a cowardly act or merely a desire to avoid negative attention?
Okay, so when we talked about this before, I thought it was a notice me move. I thought it was something that was a plea for attention. I did not expect this guy, this voter, this female, whoever it is, to kind of hide behind the anonymity. I don't like the word coward. I just think we throw it around too often, and I think it's a really negative term for people that we don't know. And I think that there are cowardly acts and acts of cowardice and all the things that we can split hairs and semantics. But I think it's more to me, a voter, a person that believes that the media has an obligation to be transparent. It's our responsibility to be so. I just think it's unprofessional to not want your name out there attached to your vote. I think it's hypocritical. It's inconsistent with what you should be wanting as a reporter, as a member of the media who has the privilege to vote for the Hall of Fame. So all those things are true. I would stop a little short of calling it cowardly because I don't know the motivation behind it. I don't know the history behind it. But I can see why people would come to that conclusion, because this is something that some people get very self-righteous when they talk about their Hall of Fame vote. And if they have one like is it as glaring of an omission as this one, and they want to hide behind it, I can see why people might call it that.
Well, I think Rand Paul will out him. So we're going to find out one way or another. We're in America, for God's sake. There's no hiding. I think that you should explain it. I think there's one vote. You know, the guy could have been unanimous, and instead we have anonymous. So anonymous needs to come forward and just say, hey, you know, I thought that the closer was more important than the shortstop. So that's why I made that vote. I wanted one guy to stand above the other for all the championships, whatever. Come up with a reason. I mean, if someone said something like that, they'd be torn to shreds, but maybe it's a reason. And I'm with you, David. I did think this was some sort of but maybe it's just somebody incompetent. Maybe somebody forgot a name. I mean, who knows?
That's what I mean.
That's what I'm saying.
You're not sure.
But I think you need to kind of explain that. And I think you need to, you know, make up a reason if you don't have one, because people want to know.
He was a bad shortstop defensively. That's the only reason. That's the only reason I could think of. But if he's not a Hall of Famer, who is? It's crazy to me. And Mully, you stepped on my Rand Paul reference, so I'll just pass the baton.
Oh, good
here.
Good job, buddy. Great minds. Fools never differ.
I'm always a fan of transparency, so I would have liked to have heard an explanation. But on the flip side of that, in the negative world that we live in, with social media as negative as it is, as nasty and terrible as people are, I understand. I understand wanting to avoid the negative attention.
That's just sad.
It is. It's a sad statement on society, David.
All right, David, you don't like cowards, so how about Nervous Nelly? How about Panty Waist? How about Yellow Belly? How about Fraidy Cat? How
panty
about
waist
Scaredy Cat? How about Lily Liver? How about Quitter? How about just Wimp? How about a pessimist, an alarmist, a scaramouche? MLB has definitely gotten to this milquetoast, okay? How this mollycoddle, okay? This faint of heart voter, okay? That's what's going on here, okay?
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That is an unbelievably great question.
Panty waist.
In light of the New York Times report that the Bulls considered Zach LaVine off limits before Thursday's NBA trade deadline, who is the organization's most valuable asset, and is LaVine the most untouchable player?
I just scoffed because this is a horrible question. I guess Zach LaVine is their best player. I guess Zach LaVine is untouchable. I don't think anyone should be untouchable. I think you got to listen to every offer. When you're in the position that the Bulls are in, I don't want them to go out and shop the guy. I don't want them to try to get something that is not of market value for him. But if someone offered you something that was beyond his capability, you'd have to jump at it. So, the organization doesn't have great assets. I think, who's the guy with the most hope connected to him? It's probably Coby White, just because we don't know yet. It might be Wendell Carter Jr., although you worry that he's not able to play. Whomever it is, it's someone that we don't know, because what we do know is that the group that is there, that we understand is there, isn't really a group of great assets.
The interesting part of this question is that I wondered if Lauri Markkanen were healthy at the trade deadline, how much interest would be in him and how willing the Bulls might be to part company with a guy that at one point was considered untouchable.
There was interest in him last year, right?
Right.
And now, and this year, there's, you would imagine, very little interest in him. That's a weird dynamic.
Because of the injury, because of the inconsistency, because of his inability to kind of take that next step. So I think it's everybody sort of understanding that Zach LaVine is their number one asset this year based on what he's done. But I don't know, you know, when you rank these things, when you have these discussions, it is all about hope. It's all about promise. And I do wonder, if they were to rank them in order of hope and promise, where Coby White is, where Wendell Carter Jr. is, in relation to guys, you know what the floor is for Zach LaVine, and you're getting it pretty much every single night here. What is his ceiling? How much higher does that go? I'm not sure, but I don't. And the other guys, so I think I would go Zach LaVine, Wendell Carter Jr., although his durability is an issue, Coby White, and then Markkanen, or Markkanen and Coby White. I think that's an interesting discussion, but those four guys probably in that order.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously Zach number one. He's not on the All-Star team, but he was in the discussion. He's a high-quality scorer. He's going to maybe win the three-point shootout, Molly, I know you're going to be very excited for.
I hope he dunks in his final three.
I like Wendell Carter. Durability-wise, it's an issue for sure, but he seems like the only inside presence rim protector they had, and they've suffered a little bit defensively since he went down. Markkanen's stock has fallen so much this year, which is unbelievably disappointing for me. I don't think that this system and this head coach is doing anybody any favors, but I think Markkanen has probably suffered the most. And Coby White, he's so young, so you have to include him there, and he's shown flashes, but boy, the luster has really kind of come off him as of late, too. I don't want to dismiss him because he is literally, what, a teenager, or is he 20 years old? Yet he's so young, and he's so raw, so you do have to still have the potential and the hope there that he can become something, but I think he has...
Remember the Roy Williams game?
Yeah, it seems like a long time ago.
Fun,
yeah.
Weren't you surprised that he wasn't even invited to the Rising Stars game?
I was. Just based on draft status.
Yeah, well, it's just based on geography.
Yeah.
Lives here.
Zach LaVine is hands down the most valuable Bulls asset. Behind that, it should be Markkanen, but he took a big step back this season. So it's Wendell Carter Jr. I understand the health concerns, but he showed you a lot before going down injured. Nobody should be untouchable, though. Nobody. You're stuck in purgatory, NBA purgatory right now. You're not doing anything.
I guess. How do you argue that he's not the most valuable asset on the team?
I guess. Okay.
That's a maybe is unavailable in Markkanen, and that's only with the right fit and the right coach and somebody who's into Finnish people that are soft as grapes. So if you're into that kind of thing, I guess he's valuable.
Wow.
You call him Mr. Maybe? You say Mr. Maybe?
I like a firm grape. I like a little bit of crunch on it.
That's the seed.
You ever throw them in the freezer?
No.
That works.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. You want the crunch, buddy. Try
it. The seed.
What kind of grapes are you eating? Oh, damn it. It's olives. 312-644-6767 is the number. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.